y'all. Mattress Mac.
Stephanie, yes, sir. What do you want me to talk about? I can do that. I want to thank you for having me here today at Texas City. I apologize for being a little bit late. I had to stop off over here in Clear Lake and deliver some solid wood furniture. It was, I'm going to tell you a story. It was Friday night, August 24th, 2017. I was at Gallery Furniture, spent the night there along with about 12 other of our great staff members as we were expecting Hurricane Harvey and expecting the worst. I went into the mattress department. I slept on a Tempur-Pedic mattress. I slept very well. Woke up Saturday morning. It was raining cats and dogs, and the feeder road was flooded, and so we had to close the store. Probably hadn't closed that store on Saturday more than once in 38 years. And a day without cash flow to me is worse than a day without oxygen. So I was very nervous and anxious. And rained very hard all day long. Then about 3 o'clock, at least out there on the north side of Houston, the sun came out, the sky cleared up, the water receded, and I drove around the neighborhood. There were several retailers and grocery stores open. I decided we would open. We sold a few mattresses, a few sofas, and I thought the worst was over, and I went home to my house over there by the Gallery Furniture Store that night. As I slept there Saturday night, I knew it was raining very hard all night Saturday night, but didn't think much of it. Got up Sunday morning early to go to church, backed out of the, my house was fine, backed out of the driveway into the street, and there was 3 feet of water in the street, and I said, well, I guess I'm not driving out right now. I went back in the house, and finally about 11 o'clock, I said, to heck with it, I'm going to go for it. So I got my little black truck and drove through the water. I got on San Felipe, which is a busy street over there, and I was going down the street. There was about 2 or 3 feet of water in the San Felipe at that time. And this lady was stranded in the middle of the road, and all these big trucks kept going by and pushing water into her car. And she motioned me to push her car up on the median, and I did that, and my tailpipes went underneath the water, and I should have stopped right then, and this story would have been very much different, but I didn't, and I pushed her up on the median, and she waved to me, and I went on. I went to Westheimer and Post Oak, where our store is, and the Westheimer and Post Oak were both terribly flooded, but our store has an elevated parking lot, so the store was okay. Went on around, I got on 610 to go to the main Gallery Furniture Store. And as I went over the first overpass there on 610, the cars are coming the wrong way on the freeway. That's when you know that the stuff has hit the fan. I was going to say another word, but there's children here anyway. It's surreal when the cars are coming the wrong way on the freeway. I drove out to Gallery Furniture North Freeway, and I called Jeremy, our warehouse manager, asked him how to get there. He said, the feeder road's all flooded. He said, you got to get off, not on the exit ramp, but on the entrance ramp, come the wrong way in the feeder road, and you might make it there. I made it there at noon. Phone was ringing off the wall. People saying, come get us, we're going to drown. The emails were exploded. The text messages were going ding, 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 ding. It wasn't that the first responders and the firemen and the policemen had done a bad job. It wasn't that they had done a magnificent job. It was this was truly a flood of biblical proportions. And we had prepared for this hurricane by renting about 24 of these Penske 26-foot-long bed trucks and get through a whole lot of high water. So we were ready to go. But what we hadn't prepared for is the fact that almost none of our employees could get there. They, too, were flooded in. And so I asked my son James, who was stranded in Dallas with his wife and 3 children, how to get the word out that both Gallery Furniture North Freeway and Gallery Furniture in Richmond was going to be open as shelters for people to get out of the storm, and how to get people with CDL commercial driver's license to come take these trucks and go pick up the people to bring them to the store. He said, "Dad, you got to do a Facebook Live." I said, "Boy, I'm 66 years old. I've never done a Facebook Live." So he coached me through a Facebook Live, and within an hour and a half, it had 4.5 million views. And the people came in, and we gave them the trucks. They showed us their commercial driver's license. We paired them up, two people to a truck. And they went out to rescue the people in the storm. We have a sign at the back of Gallery Furniture that says, "The American West was not settled by men and women who had taken a course in how to be a pioneer. This was time to lead and time to practice that faith that I had been taught when I was a child at that church I went to and still go to." And so they went out and they rescued people on overpass in the driving rain, and they rescued people in convenience stores where they'd taken shelter from the storm, and they rescued them in neighborhoods where the boats brought them to the back of the truck, and they loaded them in the back of the truck 6 or 8, 10, 12 at a time like cattle. There was no other way to do it, and they brought them to Gallery Furniture, and the people came in and they were totally shocked and traumatized as they walked in with their entire life's belongings in a black plastic trash bag in these wet clothes covered with dirty sewer water. And these two brothers went out and rescued two groups of people. And about 8 o'clock, it was still light, but it was starting to get dark and still raining very hard. And I sent them out to I-10 and Wallaceville Road to get some more people. That's out where the Houston Police Department substation. All 50 officers were out on patrol, and all 50 of their cars were totally submerged in that substation. So these brothers went out to get 10 more people. And I got a call at 10 o'clock at night, and this lady said, "I was talking to my husband on the cell phone. He was in the back of one of your trucks at I-10 in Wallaceville, and then all of a sudden all the people started screaming because water was coming in the back of the truck, and his cell phone cut off." And she said, "I don't know what happened." And I thought, "My God, we've drowned 10 people." And I called the people who were driving the truck, and they didn't answer, and I expected the worst. So knowing I had to act, I called Anthony, who's our warehouse manager. He's 6'8" tall, and the only other person I had to send with him was a guy named Junior, who's worked for us since he was 8 years old. Junior's 5 foot tall, so I sent these two guys out. They were like the odd couple. I said, "Y'all go rescue these people." And we knew where the truck was from the GPS tracking system, and normally to get there from Gallery Furniture, I-10, and Wallace will take about 30 minutes. It took them over two and a half hours, because every street on Google Maps was black or red, which means impassable. As they tried to exit I-10 to get off at Wallaceville, the Cajun Navy was launching boats off the feeder road there, and they had to go through this neighborhood, winding through this neighborhood, going over these bridges, which was incredibly dangerous. And finally, when the water was up the windshield on that big Penske truck, they had to stop and park in a convenience store. And the wake from the water took the ice machine and just floated it away. They were about a half mile from that truck. Junior couldn't get out because the water was over his head. Anthony got out and very carefully walked through the water. The street lights were still visible, trying to get a path for how to get back there. And he was careful not to trip over a curb and undulation. And he finally got to the truck and nobody's there. And so at this time, he throws caution to the wind, and he's rushing through that dirty water, trying to get back to our truck to find Junior and trying to find these people. And as he's rushing through the dirty water, he promptly falls in a manhole. And the vortex of water sucks him in. And he's heading to the San Jacinto River and then Galveston Bay. Instinctively, he sticks out his very long arms and catches himself and fights his way back up, gets a breath of air in the water, sucks him in again, and he had shorts on, put his legs out against the concrete, ripped all the legs off, skin off both of his legs, and somehow he got out. He went back and got Junior, and all this time we haven't heard a word from him. His girlfriend, wife-to-be, is there at Gallery Furniture with me. They're scheduled to get married in 3 weeks. And she tells me that she too has had a premonition that Anthony is dead. And the tension at that furniture store was so thick you could cut it with a knife, but my faith sustained me through it all. I had faith. And so Anthony and Junior get out and they start looking for these people again, and they finally get to where the truck was. Truck's empty, of course. And they look across I-10. I-10 is totally empty. There's not a car on it, just water. And they saw a truck across I-10 with a boat launch on the back, and they walked across I-10 at 2 o'clock in the morning. They asked the lady, "Do you know what happened to the people in that truck there?" She said, "My husband picked him up and took him away in his boat." And now it's about 2 o'clock at Gallery Furniture in the morning. I still haven't heard a word from them. And it's still raining cats and dogs. It's still hot, humid, and dark outside. But inside in that furniture store, we got the air conditioning cranked down to about 60 degrees because there's 200 or 300 people sleeping there. We wanted them to be comfortable. And the door opens. There's a little girl there. She's 6, 7 years old. She's there with her parents and another guy who I think was her uncle. And they're sopping wet. And they're hot. And they're traumatized because they've just waded up the feeder road to get to us in 3.5 feet of water. And she walks inside that furniture store, and now that cold air hits her, and she's not only wet and hot and traumatized, but now she's freezing to death, and her little teeth are chattering. And she comes up to me, because she's the only one in the group that speaks English, crying uncontrollably, and she says, "Can we stay here tonight?" And I have seen my people cry. And they stayed there. And all night long, this great big, you know, we had 300 people sleeping everywhere, and this great big menacing guy kept walking around. He was obviously traumatized from the day's event. And we were afraid he was going to do something strange in that store, and he might hurt somebody. And we all had eyes on him. And he finally came up to me and said, "Where's the trash bags?" I said, "They're over there." And he started emptying the trash, and his entire countenance changed. He got happy all of a sudden. And I said, "What changed your mood so much?" He said, "You know, I'm traumatized from this, having 6 feet of dirty water in my house." He said, "But all my life, all I've ever wanted to do is help people. Now that I can help people, I'm happy." And that's what we were put on this earth to do. And the strange thing was, over the next several days, all these reporters were there from the New York Times and CBS and CNN and ABC and NBC and Fox News and British Broadcasting Corporation and Australian TV. And they all asked the same question. The question was, how could you possibly let these total strangers into your fancy furniture store and let them sleep on your mattresses, your fancy mattresses, and your sofas, and your recliners? And how could you possibly let these people into this store and open it up like this and not have any income and feed them and give them showers and towels and blankets, et cetera, et cetera? How could you do this? My answer was, how could I not? How could I not? They thought what I did was heroic. What we did at Gallery Furniture was not heroic at all. We did what our parents had taught us. We did what we had been taught in those churches on Sundays for decades. I had prepared for that day since I was a child. And when the day came, we were ready. Valor is a gift. Valor is a gift, Carl Sandburg once said. Those having it never know whether or not they have it until the test comes. The test came for Houston and for Texas City and for Dickinson and for all of us in Southeast Texas from Corpus Christi to Beaumont, August 24th, 25th, 26th of 2017. We passed the test. And, you know, they all kept asking me, "What are you going to do with all this furniture that these people have slept on or ate dinner on or whatever?" And I said, "What do you think I'm going to do with it? I'm going to mark it down and have a sale." And I got to tell you, we had over the three or four nights people stayed there, probably about 12 or 1,500 people slept there over the three or four nights. And out of that 1,500 people, only three of them peed on a mattress. That's not bad. I'm told it's less than the national hotel average. Hurricane Harvey was the worst of times for Southeast Texas. 50 to 70 inches of rain all the way from Fort O'Connor to Beaumont. Hundreds of thousands of homes with 1 to 4 to 10 to 12 feet of dirty water in them. One out of every five cars in Harris County was totaled. It was the worst of times. But it was also the best of times for all of us in Southeast Texas, because for one brief moment in time, we all came together. And we forgot about right-wing politics or left-wing politics, and all we did was care about people. And isn't that what we teach in these churches every single Sunday, to care about people? And that's what we do. And we keep the faith. I'll never forget, I was there 2 weeks after the hurricane on a Sunday, and this woman walked in wearing a yellow Mormon Tabernacle Church volunteer vest. She said, "I want to bring Gifford Nielsen and 5 or 10 people, men and women from the Mormon church, by to see you in an hour and a half." I said, "Sure, that's fine, bring him by." Gifford Nielsen, if you remember, played quarterback for BYU, played quarterback for the Houston Oilers, and was the Channel 11 news broadcaster for sports in this market for 20 years. So they came by an hour and a half later. All these women and men wearing these vests, and one of the guys was one of the 11 apostles of the entire Mormon church. And I asked Gift Nielsen, I said, "How many volunteers do you have in the Mormon church? How many came into Houston to help out the people that have been affected by Hurricane Harvey?" He said, "Within 10 days, we had 6,000 volunteers from around the world." And there's one neighborhood in North Houston that 500 homes flooded. One Mormon lived in the neighborhood. They went in and mucked out that Mormon's home, and they fed the entire neighborhood from that home for 6 weeks, and they went and mucked out everybody's house in the neighborhood. And I told this story to a bunch of rich people in California a couple months ago, and one of the ladies said, "Well, you know, that's easier for those Mormons to do or those Christians to do. That's the way they were raised." And my answer was, why can't we all be raised like that? That's what the faith is all about. We're here to help one another, brothers and sisters. And so the lessons and takeaway from Hurricane Harvey is to keep the faith, to never give up. In spite of the darkest of times, the goodness Hurricane Harvey brought was it brought people together, and they're still staying together. We had people bring us supplies from all 48 lower states. We had one rap guy, a rap songwriter that I'd never heard of. He brought us 52 truckloads of bottled water to give out to our people there at about a cost of about $20,000 a piece. We had all sorts of people there. I got a call from a guy. He said, "My name is Steve Van Dorn. I own Band Shoes." And he said, "I understand you've got people there getting supplies." I said, "We do." He said, "I want to come out there in an hour. I just rolled in here from California with a fleet load of trucks, and I'm going to give out 6,000 pair of Band Shoes." I'm not a hipster. I didn't know what Band Shoes were. So I said, "Come on, Steve. Well, I know what Band Shoes are now." It's about having faith in your fellow human beings and doing what Jesus Christ would want us to do, which is help people, irregardless of their race, color, creed, economic level. It doesn't matter. And that's the story of my faith. And even when we thought those people were drowned, and even when the darkest hour was there at 2 o'clock in the morning, I had faith we would get through this, because my faith sustained me through the entire journey, and the seeing the outstanding outpouring of these human beings to help their fellow man made me believe more than ever, even though we have all these problems in this country, we can solve these problems if we just come together and work together. And I'll finish with one more story about faith. This one, like the Hurricane Harvey story, is a very personal one. And it's about my little child. Her name is Elizabeth. When she was 11 years old, she started acting very strangely. She was a competitive gymnast, and the time she was 11 to 12, she lost about 30 pounds, but she didn't have to lose. And she was acting very strangely in the little private school we were sending her to and doing all these strange rituals and compulsions, and I just didn't know what to do. And one night her mother said, you know, we got to do something about Elizabeth. And at that time they kicked her out of the private school because she was too difficult to handle. So she enrolled at Westfield High School, which is a big public school in North Houston. So I talked to all my friends down at the Texas Medical Center, and my wife searched the internet trying to find a place to help Elizabeth. And we took her to several North Houston area doctors, and they all said they'd never seen such a severe case before of obsessive compulsive disorder, and there's no hope for this child. That the best thing we could do for our family's lifestyle was to put her in a mental institution for the rest of her life and forget about her.
No.
That's right. The answer was no. You see, her mother and I are not buyers, we're sellers. And we weren't buying that. And Linda lived with Elizabeth for 2 years upstairs as she went through this illness. It took her 8 hours to take a shower. She was fixated on the number 42. She had to put on her pants 42 times, times 42 times. She had to wash her hands 42 times, times 42 times. So you can imagine the agony. And she screamed every night, God, what did I do to deserve this? I wish I was dead. But again, my faith and my wife's faith and her faith sustained us. We knew there was a light at the end of the tunnel if we just didn't give up. So finally one day, after she genuflected in the living room 1,500 times, we knew we had to do something about it. So we took her up to the Miniger Clinic, which is a mental health facility for teenagers with OCD in Topeka, Kansas. We took her up there the day before her birthday, one cold February day. And as we got to that Miniger Clinic, it was a bleak place. It was old and dilapidated by then. And at that time, she convinced her sister and me to take her back home to Texas. She could overcome this by herself. But her mother was a strong one and said, you know, to save her life, we got to put her here. And we put her there that day. As we left there, that cold, snowy day there in February day in Kansas, I'll never forget a little face pushed up against the plate glass window, screaming at her mother, Mom, please don't leave me here, because she felt like we're going to leave her in that mental institution for the rest of her life. That was her perception. That was her reality. That wasn't what we were going to do, but that's what she thought. So she sat down on the little bench and cried. And a little girl came and put her arm around her and said, it's okay to cry. I cried, too, when I got here, but they've taught me how to keep the faith, and they've taught me how to fight this disease, and I'm going to go home in a month, and eventually you'll be able to go home too. Well, after about 8 or 10 weeks of intensive therapy, and thanks to the good Lord and the doctors and nurses there at Miniger, Elizabeth came back and re-enrolled at Westfield High School. And the wonderful teachers and administrators there helped her with this disease, and they read books about the disease, and they helped her do her schoolwork, and she made a little progress. Then 8 months later, she had another terrible relapse, and went back to Miniger, which at that time was in Houston, and stayed there for another 4 or 5 months. And after she got out of Miniger for the second time, she came back to the house with us, and she started some OCD support groups, and she found out that work is life's greatest therapy. She found out that her joy in life came from helping other people with his disease, and so she started all these support groups and became the national spokesperson for the Obsessive Compulsive Disorder Foundation. And one of the proudest days of our life was seeing this child walk across the stage there at Westfield High School and get her diploma against all odds. And then she tried college 3 or 4 times, and the OCD would always overcome her, and she didn't do well in college. You see, mental illness is a cruel disease. No one knows who it may strike or why. Mental illness never goes away. It lasts forever. My child will always be walking on the edge of the cliff, and I cannot keep her from falling. Finally, on her last try, her little friend was going to school up at Loyola University in Chicago, and she said, Liz, why don't you try this college? So she went up there and she enrolled in the School of Social Work. And she had this wonderful teacher who became her mentor there at Loyola, and Liz did pretty well. And she asked her mentor, why are you involved in the School of Social Work? And her mentor said, you know, I came from a fairly affluent family here in Chicago. She said, I always had a problem where my parents would take us to these food soup kitchens on Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Easter, and we'd feed the homeless. She said, I always had an issue about why we had so much and these other people had so little, and that's why I went into social work. She said, and throughout my college career, I would always write to Mother Teresa. And Mother Teresa would write her back and put on the end of the letter, P.S., you really must come visit us. So after she graduated from college, this woman got on the plane and flew to Calcutta, India, never knowing if she would meet Mother Teresa, and she slept in the convent with Mother Teresa that very night, 8 feet away from Mother Teresa on a cot. And they would go out and tend to the dying people in the streets of Calcutta, dying of AIDS and leprosy and tuberculosis and all these other terribly communicable diseases. And the medical protocol was everybody was to wear gloves and masks so they wouldn't get the diseases. Mother Teresa forbade them from wearing gloves or masks because she wanted these human beings to have the comfort of human touch in their dying moments, and nobody ever got sick. And one day Mother Teresa told her, she said, we're going on a trip, bring a change of clothing. And they flew across the world, and they're walking through St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And Liz's teacher was a tall lady, Mother Teresa's a diminutive lady. They're walking through the basilica together. And there's millions of people there and helicopters and TV cameras and all this media. And Mother Teresa turned to Liz, the teacher, and said, what is going on? What's all the commotion about? Why are all these people here? Liz, the teacher, said, she said, Mother Teresa, you really don't get it, do you? Mother Teresa said, I don't really get it. What's the commotion about? She said, Mother Teresa, they're here for you. Imagine that. A life of faith, a life built for others. You got to keep the faith in the good times and the bad times. My faith has sustained me. My little child never gave up, even though she was suicidal. And her mother never gave up on her. And she kept fighting it. And now this child, who they said would never graduate high school, has a PhD in social work from the University of Houston. And this child, who was a patient for two long extended stays at the Menninger Clinic, is on the board of directors of the Menninger Clinic and is a professor at Baylor College of Medicine because she kept the faith. What we need in this country is more churches. What we need is in this country is more faith-based ministries. What we need in this country is more people to teach the young people how to act. The stuff I did during Hurricane Harvey was what my parents expected me to do. And the best thing about it was hopefully it set an example for lots of young people that this is the desired behavior to help one another to live better and live together. My faith has sustained me throughout my life, has sustained my wife and my beautiful children, and I am proud to be a person of faith and proud to be able to address you here tonight. Thanks very much.